Now, it's The Six with the Jeff Calkins Show.
Neil McCready. On Twitter, at Neil McCready, publisher of RebelGrove.com. You can subscribe to the Rebel Grove YouTube channel today. He joins me now. Neil, how are you?
Jeff, I'm good. It's always good to talk to you. How are you?
You're nice to come on. You had Keith Carter on your podcast, and what did he say?
Well, he said a lot, actually. We had him on yesterday in the middle of the morning, I guess, and he said that he was hopeful, is the key word, hopefully, that they would be able to bring athletes to campus around July 1st, and that they were still planning and hoping for an on-time start to the season. He said that they had obviously had to be planning for other provisions as well, other scenarios, including an October 1st start to the season, a November 1st start to the season, and then, of course, a spring season, which is a scenario that is very much out there. And then I asked a lot about fans in the stands, and he basically talked through a number of scenarios, one in which they start the season with no fans and begin to phase fans into the stadium over the course of a season, and that kind of thing. So, you know, first of all, it was very nice of him to give us some time, and second of all, it was very nice of him to be as open as he was about the fact that, you know, right now you just don't know, but you have to make plans. You have to make plans for all different scenarios, and I know that some people out there, it's kind of a weird thing to me, I don't know about you, it's a weird thing to me that there's almost a criticism of people for planning for a best-case scenario. I don't really understand that logic, but it's out there, you know, when someone says, well, you know, it's our job to plan for all the different scenarios that are in play, and that includes the worst-case scenario, but that also includes the best-case scenario.
No, it seems to me that people should. Like, I mean, Ryan Silverfield on his he did a Zoom cast recently, obviously the new Memphis coach, and he said he had a plan for everything, like a plan for it starting in July, a plan for it starting in August, like, here you are, you're a first-year coach. Obviously Lane isn't a first year coach, but he is first year at that program. And normally you have your all plan laid out, and now you have to have a whole bunch of plans for a whole bunch of different options. I think it makes all the sense in the world. But I was intrigued within that. Of course, the right answer, and here's the other thing people criticize, is people criticize for saying, I don't know. Like, really, right now, the Memphis Health Department is getting criticized for saying, we'll see, which is really all anyone can say, right? It's John Martin said, it's like when your mother, you ask if your mother, if you can go over and play at someone's house tonight, and she says, we'll see. Well, that's a very frustrating answer to people, but that's what we're getting now, and I understand why people are frustrated by it, but it's what if you ask the SEC, like, what are they saying? They're saying, we'll see. That's the only thing you can say. But within that, the idea that he said he's optimistic that players might be on campus July 1?
Yeah, and I think you know, he also was quick to say that some of that optimism is because if you can't have them there by July 1, and he went on to say this, as you push that date back, and he mentioned July the 15th and beyond, an on-time start of the season, meaning a Labor Day weekend start of the season, becomes unrealistic. Because I think everyone has at least accepted the reality that these young men, in football's case, are not going to be in the type of shape on, say, July the 15th that they normally would be in on July the 15th, because they would have been in the middle of an off-season program where they're doing a lot of, quote, voluntary, end quote, workouts. They are they're running in the morning and lifting in the afternoon, or vice versa, and they're doing 7-on-7. They're in great shape. You can't simulate that right now. It's impossible. We're in Oxford, where I am right now. If everything goes according to plan, gyms are going to open on May the 11th. Well, you know, I mean, that's applied to people all over the country. So, in other words, you're going to need potentially as much as 2 weeks for a quarantine situation, which is something I've heard is likely for football teams, soccer teams, cross-country teams, whatever. When they get together, they're going to have to quarantine for up to 14 days. And then you need 6 weeks of conditioning and practice to have the players in shape.
Do you mean quarantine from each other or quarantine as a team from the rest of the community? What is that?
I think, well, what I hear is as a team from the rest of the community, where you develop that almost, I don't know about you. I've learned more about epidemiology in the last couple of months than I ever learned in my life and ever want to learn for the rest of my life. But apparently they say that's something that scientifically you should probably do. Keith made mention yesterday, maybe it's a 5-day, maybe it's 10-day, maybe it's 15-day. They don't know yet. Again, to your point, they don't know. These are things that are still being discussed. But, you know, he was just saying, if you're going to have an on-time start to the season, you've got to, the goal has to be, let's get the players here on July the 1st. And as of today, that while that is optimistic, it's not outlandish to think that you could pull that off. And that's essentially what he was saying. I thought it was enlightening. You know, I mean, he said, hey, look, if you can't start on July the 1st and you can't get started until after July the 15th, look at the numbers. You're not starting on September the – I mean, Ole Miss is scheduled to open on September the 5th. I don't know what day Memphis is scheduled to open. It's somewhere around then, I'm sure. That becomes very problematic because you just run out of time. I've heard a lot of people that I believe who very quietly think the season's going to start in late September, early October. That's what makes the most sense based on a number of things, especially based on when regular students are going to be allowed to show up to campuses to go to college.
Talking to Neil McCready, publisher of rebelgrove.com. You can listen to the interview with Keith Carter at his podcast, which is Rebel Grove podcast channel. It's on YouTube. The interesting thing about that is that if he's talking about July 1, he is talking about having players on campus when there are no students on campus. And that is something that people have sort of balked at. They said, how can we do this? Summer classes are all virtual. How can we do this? Or how can we have games without fans? How can it be safe for players but not safe for fans? I honestly am not as disturbed by that. It seems to me there's a clear distinction between having 100 players together and 60,000 fans together. Like, I think those are different things. But I have heard it from different university officials, including the president of the University of Memphis, David Rudd, who said, put me down in the category of people who don't understand why we can say something isn't safe for fans but is safe for players. Now, it may be that David Rudd is saying that because at the University of Memphis, the bulk of their money from football comes – he may be saying it totally sincerely. You know, that's he's probably motivated by the health of everybody. But in addition, at the University of Memphis, most of their money comes from tickets, not TV.
Sure.
Playing without fans doesn't do Memphis a whole lot of good. It actually would still be reasonably lucrative to do that at Ole Miss, right?
Well, it's really interesting. So there's a number of things here, and don't let me eat up the entire show answering this question, because that's a great question. I think it's a fascinating topic. First of all, Lane Kiffin, the new Ole Miss coach, has gone on record as saying, if it's not safe for fans to be in the stands, it's not safe to have 200 people clogged up on a sideline. And by the time you put all of the players on the sideline and all of the coaches on the sideline and the water boys and the football boys that run up and down the thing, and you put the lines, you know, you got the official, the side judge, you got the guys working the chains. I mean, I'm sure there's a way to eliminate some of that number. But at the end of the day, if you look at a typical college football sideline, there's a lot of people on it. And so he's saying if it's not safe for the fans or to be there, how is it safe to have 150, 200 people in one little 50-yard area all congregated together? It makes no sense. And frankly, to Kiffin's defense, that's a pretty good point. Now, the game that I keep using, because I started kind of searching for it, because there's this sense in among SEC programs of, hey, we got to play these games because of this TV money. And I get it completely. But I went and found another game. It's a game that nobody cares about. You don't care about. I don't care about it. Jeffrey will probably bet on it. But nobody else cares about it. And that San Jose State, San Jose State is scheduled to play at Central Michigan on September the 5th. If you tell the people at Central Michigan, Jeff, that they can play the game but no fans are allowed, what is the incentive for Central Michigan to play that game?
Right, nothing. Right, that's my point.
What is the incentive for San Jose State? What is the incentive for San Jose State? I presume they wouldn't bus to, I guess, where is that? That's Mount Pleasant, Michigan. I assume they'd have to fly. So they fly, I don't know my Michigan geography all that well, but let's just play along and say they fly from San Jose to Detroit. They have to get a bus, go to Mount Pleasant. They have to stay in hotels. You have to feed the kids. I would assume they'd want to eat at some point during that 36 to 48 hours. Then you've got after the game, you've got to put them back on a bus, take them to Detroit, fly them back to San Jose. What if there's no gate, what is why would Central Michigan pay the, I don't know, $300,000 guarantee or whatever to San Jose State to come to play a game where there's no gate and there's no revenue? And nothing against the Mid-America Conference, but I'm going to guess their TV contract's a little less lucrative than the one that the SEC operates under. It makes no sense. So that's where I come back to when people say, well, you can play these games without fans. I think the only way you can do this thing without fans is if the Power Five and maybe a handful of other leagues or whatever acknowledge that, hey, we are in a different level financially than the rest of you, and we're going to have to break off and do this individually. And I don't know how you break those contracts. Like Ole Miss's second game of the season is Southeastern Missouri, or Southeast Missouri, however you say that. And so they're coming down. They're coming down for a payday. So I don't know what the guarantee is. I would guess it's about $800,000. If you're Ole Miss and you can't have fans in the stands, well, there goes a lot of the money that you were going to use to pay Southeast Missouri to come take their beating. How do you justify that?
And furthermore, how do you, if you're Ole Miss, say, we're going to play Alabama, but we're not going to play that game? You might be able to tell for a payday game, you might be able to cancel it on the grounds of, you know, whatever. Maybe there's some force majeure language in there that enable, but it doesn't work if you're playing Alabama for the TV money. You know what I mean?
But the SEC, the game we just mentioned, the SEC network has the rights to that game. They're going to want Ole Miss to play that game.
Well, you could do that. I mean, I think that's actually right. This could be what causes for the Power Five conferences, it probably makes economic sense to play without fans, because you're still getting TV money. For Memphis, it just doesn't, because they don't get enough TV money. And for every group of five team, it just doesn't. Here's the thing, by the way, back to the Kiffin thing on the sidelines. If it is, however, not safe for them to play a game because they're crowded on the sidelines, then it's not safe for them to practice either.
Right. And that's where and that's what he was basically saying. To his credit, he has not been a meathead coach in this. He has consistently said, we're going to play when the virus says we can play.
What's
a great answer. Yeah. And people criticize the answer, but it's a great answer. He's exactly right. And here's what I keep saying to people, and this is along the lines of your mom saying at 10 o'clock in the morning when you say, hey, can I go to little Johnny's house at 5 o'clock? And she says, we'll see. That's the frustrating answer, but I don't know what's going to be happening at 4:30, little Timmy, whether you can go to Johnny's house or not. But here we sit on April the 29th. We're going to know a whole lot more about this one way or the other on May the 29th than we know on April the 29th. We're going to know a lot more on June the 15th than we know today. We're going to see, hopefully, we're going to be able to gauge what happens with the Korean Baseball League, for example, as it pertains to professional sports. It appears that NASCAR is going to have a couple of races or a handful of races here fairly soon without fans. I think the PGA Tour is trying to have a tournament or two without fans. We're going to have some things we can gauge. We're going to have more information about the virus. We're going to know more about antibodies. We're going to know more about false positives and false negatives. There's just going to be more information available to make a decision. It's one of the reasons that I'm amazed at some of the people who are trying to make these long-term definitive decisions in April for, say, August and September, when you don't have to make those decisions just yet.
Yeah, It's frustrating. I understand it. Like today, the ESPN has a big story, series of stories up about when we can start, what it might look like. And one of the things some epidemiologists say is that it really, like, people talk about having a season in the spring. Now, quite apart from the fact that that's going to mess a whole lot of things up. Like, what does it do for football next fall? I mean, the, you know, a year and a half from now.
Sure.
What does it do with the NFL draft? What does it do with, like, who knows? Like, all a lot of issues there. They actually said from an epidemiological perspective, we probably won't have a vaccine next January either. It doesn't make a huge heck of a lot of difference. Like, you're buying time for what? At this point, for what? If the hospitals are already sort of geared up, like, what exactly are you postponing? It's still putting 50,000 to 60,000 people in a stadium is still going to be problematic next February, was the answer that some of the people gave here. And, like, no one wants to hear that. Like, I get this. We all just want our lives back. But I don't know. How's Lane Kiffin recruiting?
He's recruiting pretty well. Look, they, from a pure football standpoint, they're, and they had a, like, to your point, they had a plan. They had a very aggressive recruiting plan for the spring that was in place back in December and January that they'd put into place that they were pretty excited about. That I guess they're guilty of not planning for a pandemic. But, you know, they were going to use the spring as not only a way to evaluate their current roster, but more importantly, to really build excitement with recruits, bring a lot of recruits in. They were going to use, I think, a fairly large amount of official visits for some of the spring stuff. They were going to be, you know, the spring game would have been on April the 18th. I think that was going to be a big visit weekend for them as well. All of those plans obviously went by the boards. And, you know, if most people are right, and I think they are, that June's out of the question for bringing kids to campus, that means they're going to lose their camp season, which is not really about the camps as much as it's about being able to bring kids to campus to see, to visit, all that stuff. You lose that too. So they're behind through no fault of their own as it pertains to recruiting, but they've had a very active virtual recruiting thing that they've done, like a lot of schools have done. And, you know, they've landed a couple of commitments, and I think they're close on a few other kids, and they're doing okay, but they're not doing as well as I think they felt like they would have been doing, you know, had they been able to have a normal spring. But, you know, they're not the only program in that boat. Mississippi State right down the road's in the same boat with a new coach and a new coaching staff. So, you know, we'll find out with a lot of these people is kind of how much they can adjust on the fly. Kiffin's a pretty laid-back guy, so he probably will handle it pretty well. I'm sure that, you know, behind the scenes, they're kind of adjusting some plans for how they'll handle the fall. You know, if you can't have fans in the stands, can you bring recruits to the stands? If the college season is delayed, are high school seasons delayed? What? There's so many questions that we just can't answer today. There's no way to know. And I will say this. We had Dr. Alan Jones. He's the chief of emergency medicine at University of Mississippi Medical Center in Jackson. He was on one of my network of podcasts. And I asked him about a season with fans, and he gave me some percentages that you could look at for how many people would become infected based on what we know today, how many of those people would have to be hospitalized. It was pretty sobering numbers. But then he also said something that's very true. At some point, we as a society, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals, and everywhere in between, we have to decide as a society what level of risk are we willing to live with. I mean, if the goal is we can't get back to anything resembling normal until we have eradicated the virus, that'll be a hell of a long way. If it's, hey, we're going to have some common sense here. People are going to have to be smart. He made the comment. He said, you know, you change, the calculus changes if every fan in the stands wears a mask. And then you see people push back and say, I'm not wearing a mask to a football game. Well, I mean, if that's part of a sacrifice that you have to make it happen, why would you not? You know, if you have comorbidities, I've learned that word too over the past few months. If you have those, if you are, if you're diabetic, if you have high blood pressure that's not treated, if you are obese, if you have a number of factors that would make you more at risk to have a bad outcome, if you're older than 65 years of age, those kinds of things. You don't need to be at that game. You don't need to be in that crowd in the event that, that fans are allowed. There is going to be some common sense that's needed. There is a degree of risk, you know. I mean, every time you get in your car and you turn on the engine and you buckle your seatbelt and you get out on the interstate, you are taking more risk than you would be taking if you stayed locked in your home. So there are decisions that you have to make on a daily basis. And I talking to medical people and just having some degree of common sense, I think that's going to be one of the things that we have to talk about living with the virus. I've had people say, you know, my daughter goes to the University of Arkansas. I've had people say, are you comfortable sending her back? And my answer is yes. She's 19 years. She's 19 years old tomorrow.
Yeah, but here's the question, though. Is the 60-year-old professor or the 58-year-old professor going to be interested in going back? And and if you have diabetes, you can stay away from the football game. But what if you have diabetes, and not because you're obese, you were born with diabetes, whatever, and your workplace says we're coming back?
I think that's where we as a society have to say, hey, there's no fault of that person. So we've got to figure out a way to accommodate that person where he or she can do his or her job and not lose his or her livelihood. And that might be a class that is taught primarily online, or maybe it is taught via Skype or whatnot inside of a classroom, and you have grad assistants who help administer some of the stuff with the class.
We're gonna figure out all kinds of things. I suspect big lecture classes will be by Zoom. Smaller sections will not be by Zoom, et cetera. Yes. That's how it will continue. Last question. Ole Miss did not have any football players drafted in the SEC. I mean, in the NFL draft, the SEC had a whole bunch drafted. Of the people who were drafted, which players do you love? Just give me a couple. And which players are you like, I'm not convinced, even though everybody else is?
Around the league?
Yeah, just SEC players who were drafted in this past draft.
Yeah, I love Tua. I have since day one. And if the hip checks out okay, I think it's worth the risk. I saw a great quote about him that a medical person said, you know, look, someone with his injury might need a hip replacement at 45, but he won't need it at 25. And, you know, if you're just looking at it from a pure football standpoint, I love his arm. I love everything about him. He has a charisma about him that I haven't seen in many college players. I like Burrow, too. I think Burrow, look at the season that he had. I've loved Grant Delpit, the safety at LSU, for years. It sort of fits the mold of those DBs that they've produced that have been such good players at the professional level. I like the running back from Vanderbilt, Vaughn. I think he'll be a good back at the professional level. People ask, why did Ole Miss not have anybody drafted? It's a real simple answer. NCAA sanctions and NCAA investigations are meant, they are designed to cripple your program. And they did. And combined with some of the decisions that Ole Miss made in the wake of that, you know, it's not surprising. I have a mailbag that we just put out today on Rebel Grove, and one of the questions was, you know, who do you see from Ole Miss getting drafted next year? And I go through the roster and look at juniors and seniors, and there just aren't many names of guys that, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, that guy's getting drafted next year. It just shows you kind of where that program, where the damage was done in 16 and 17 from a recruiting standpoint, and even the beginning of 18, where they couldn't recruit the way that the rest of the league recruits. And it shows up in the standings. It shows up in the win-loss and all those things. NCAA investigations are meant to cripple your program, and if they draw out long enough, they will.
He is Neil McCready on Twitter, at Neil McCready, publisher of Rebel Grove. Go over, check him out at rebelgrove.com. Subscribe to the Rebel Grove podcast YouTube channel today. Thank you, Neil.
The Jason and John Show.
Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And as promised, he is Adnan Burke. You can catch him on DAZN. Change up on DAZN. You can also hear him on the GM Shuffle, available wherever you get your podcasts. He joins us now. Adnan, what's going on, man? Thanks for the time.
Good, man. I have such respect for anybody doing daily radio right now, 3 hours a day, when there's no sports on. You know, it's really easy when it's coming off Game 7 of the World Series or Super Bowl or National Championship. Hey, we can talk all day, but this is a grind. So I hope you guys are hanging in there. This is not – listen, I used to fill in, as you guys know, on ESPN Radio quite a bit.
Yep.
And when you get to pick and pop, it's pretty fun. But at daily radio, that's a big challenge. I hope you guys are doing okay.
Yeah, we're hanging in
there.
And you know what's been very interesting throughout all of this is I've actually gone into the and done the research, and if you look at sort of, we don't have access to our Nielsen ratings on a daily basis, but we do have, we can see how many people are listening on the internet. And when you look at our numbers today and you compare them to this time last year when sports were around, they're either the exact same or we actually have more listeners. So in a time like this, it's amazing, but I think people sort of turn to, you know, the live and local, which is the benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody who appreciates radio knows that it is the most personal medium out there. You know, TV, David Lloyd, Sports Center anchor for many years, once said to me, TV might be more money, and maybe it's, you know, you get your name in light, so to speak, but radio is more fulfilling because it is truly that personal medium. And you guys know, listen, you're telling stories about yourselves. I mean, when you're listening to the radio station, like you said, especially local radio, you feel like it's a family member. So kudos to both of you.
Yeah.
So well.
Well, thanks for thanks for the kind words and thanks for hopping on. Let's get into some things that are happening in sports. I want to start with Major League Baseball. We kind of got a head fake at the beginning of the month, right? You know, from ESPN, I don't think it was a head fake, but it was just, it felt like maybe more significant at the time than it ended up being. I imagine for Major League Baseball, they're coming up with a ton of plans, just like the like the NBA, like the NFL, perhaps like college football. They're coming up with a ton of contingencies. And the latest contingency, it sounds like, is that, you know, the season could start in June, and it may be able to start, you know, in Major League Baseball parks and home baseball parks, and it would be split up amongst divisions. I mean, when you read that story, is it viable to you? Is there more merit to this one, perhaps? What did you think of this iteration?
Well, I'm certainly hopeful more than anything, and as a guy who loves and eats and breathes baseball, I just couldn't imagine a year without baseball. It's obviously heartbreaking what's happening to so many people across this country, and small businesses certainly, and what our first responders are doing. But on a different level, as the three of us know, baseball and sports serve as a real respite for everybody, a really needed tonic when everyone needs to get away from life, and certainly we make our profession in sports. So first and foremost, I was 16 in 94. I still can't believe the Expos didn't get a chance to win the World Series, obviously being Canadian. I mean, that killed baseball Montreal. And so I couldn't imagine a year without baseball. And so that's the reason why I have the most optimism, fellas, along with the fact that I see we live here in North Jersey, so, you know, the epicenter is New York City. The numbers have been going down in terms of deaths, and certainly people are staying home and social distancing is working. So the optimism I feel here, guys, is incentive is the most important thing. Jeff Passan wrote a great column on ESPN.com a couple days ago, and what Jeff was writing in there is that incentive is the key. Like, if you really want something to happen, it can happen. And Dr. Fauci, we all know, is the smartest guy in the country these days. What's he doing a couple of weeks ago? I said, listen, there is a way for sports to return. It has to be in a bubble. You have to be in a quarantine situation. But you can do it without fans, and, of course, that's the biggest part of it. Now, financially, Tom Verducci, of course, the great writer of SI, my colleague MLB Network, you know, he has said that the revenue from fans, that's like 35 to 40%. That's a lot of money, you know, the owners would be missing out on if there's no fans. But, listen, the TV numbers would be robust. We all know people are losing their minds. People will be so happy to have baseball back on, sports back on. So I think, to your point, first and foremost, they are definitely working on contingency plans. And you know what the best part of it I find when I read updates? It's in conjunction with the CDC, right? It's one thing if there's some cowboys out there saying, hey, you know what, we're going to get baseball, we're going to do this. No. They are doing this in a very smart, detailed manner with the smartest doctors available. Dr. Ali Khan, I believe, is the one who's part of the CDC who is helping Major League Baseball, whether it's Mr. Manfred or whomever, as to find a right plan. And the variety of plans that I've heard, they make sense in a vacuum. You know, Arizona is where they have great spring training facilities, had the players there for 3 months. Arizona and Florida, of course, both spring training sites. You add Texas to the mix, which is now reopening apparently an incredible park, which I have not seen yet, but it's going to be for the Texas Rangers. You can use that. I believe it's retractable. You know, retractable roofs are going to be critical. My home country of Canada, Toronto, is going to have retractable roofs. So you start to see, okay, if the country is opening up here, we've seen that now with, you know, Florida and Texas and Georgia and Colorado, well, then it would make sense that baseball would follow suit. So I think, honestly, I'm sure Major League Baseball has like 10, 15 different contingency plans, but I hope we get baseball back sooner rather than later. And I'm optimistic. You know, after reading Jeff's column, he's as plugged in as anybody. He said, listen,
it seems like
going to be baseball in 2020.
Man, I hope so. And it does. It seems like the key to all of it, Fauci has said this as well, is testing. And I'm just curious if you feel the same way, Adnan. I think it feels like we're getting there slowly but surely, because that's how the confidence comes back, right? And before you can have the fans back, you got to know what's going on around you. It feels like the key to all of this is us getting to a better place and testing. And it feels like slowly we're getting there.
It is 100% about testing. You couldn't be more right, because you know, if you say, okay, no fans, great. Well, you're eliminating 40,000 people. Okay, now there's no issue of social distancing because there's no fans there as well. Okay, great. But then as you point out, okay, 40-man roster, and I think the rosters, I'm just guessing, would be expanded, right? Because
right.
you're going to have a lot of games in a condensed schedule. So let's say that rather than 25-man, hey, maybe we'll make it 40-man like we normally would do when you call up in September. So let's say there's 40. All right, times two is 80. Okay, trainers, you got broadcasters, umpires, right? 100 people. Okay, can we get tests for 100 people for each game? Well, theoretically, yeah. But you're right. It's all about testing. I mean, God, I've never been a bigger news junkie in my life than I have in the last month. And everything I kept seeing with regards to CDC is more testing. And I liked what I just read the other day about Serie A. I mean, the soccer leagues in Europe are apparently going to try to get going in June and July. And what a great gesture by the Serie A. My understanding is what they said is this. We don't want people to feel like, oh, superstar athletes are getting preferential treatment. So for every test one of us gets, we're going to donate 5 tests to the rest of the country.
Oh, wow.
Something along those lines. So
yeah.
I thought that was really, really smart to hear, because you don't want people saying, oh, so the millionaires are getting tested
right.
before everybody else. So I think that's an important thing to look at, too.
NFL draft, you were all over this. What were the Packers doing? I get planning for the future, but when you've got Aaron Rodgers, who you've won just one Super Bowl with, you make an argument both with him and Brett that you wanted to win more. What are you doing yeah. not giving him all the weapons he can so he can win as many as possible the next 3 to 4 years?
So every year when the draft comes on, of course I love the NFL, as do you guys. I've got to the draft on my phone. I'm following it, but I'm normally watching playoff hockey, baseball, playoff basketball. So this was the first year I really got to indulge like nobody's business. I wasn't working. I could sit at home and literally watch it. And of course, me and Michael Lombardi have our NFL podcast, the GM Shuffle. So
love
I had an incentive, obviously, to watch it. It was my job. But it was amazing to me. In the past, I'd always laugh. I go, why is this so exciting just to hear names being read? But this year, when I watched the virtual draft, I really did think it was fascinating because of the fact you got to see a window
yep.
into all these people's lives. And the Packers gave us that first, oh, my God, moment. Because up until that, I think, you know, fine, Tua, we all know, is a controversial pick. But we felt like the Dolphins would get him, or he'd
yep.
go in the top 10. But no question, the Packers, like, you got to be kidding me. To your point, if you had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, if you told somebody you've got generational quarterbacks, like two of the top 10, maybe top 15 all time,
yes, sir.
When it's all said and done, and all you get to show for it is 2 Super Bowls? Like, are you kidding me? Like, you couldn't win more Super Bowls than that? And for Rodgers, I mean, we all know the parallels, the fact he's right around the same age as Favre was when Rodgers was drafted. We all know he's a sensitive guy, does not like criticism, all that kind of stuff. This is not going to play well. And the bottom line is this. If you think Jordan Love is going to be a superstar, then I get it. But I don't think he's going to be a superstar. I think he might be okay. But the thing is, he's going to be a development. He's going to be a couple of years to get better, and that's not what I want to see. And how about this? It's one thing if the Packers go, okay, we're getting Love, but after that, we'll help you out. Not a single receiver drafted.
Not
how
one.
Does that happen?
I don't.
Packers,
I have. I'm with you. I have no clue. I have no clue how you do. I'm a Bears fan, so I'm like, thank you. But what are you thinking? To your point.
Yeah. Oh, it's brutal. Like, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm like, dude, I'm 36 years old. You got to help me out here, okay? If you want to say I've lost my fastball, I'm not the same quarterback I was 2 years ago. Mahomes has now passed me. Lamar Jackson's passed. All right, fine, no problem. But you got to help me out here. What happened to a supplemental catch? What happened to bringing weapons there? And then if I fall on my sword, by all means, you can criticize me and kick me out the door, but give me a chance. I'm with you. My brother's a huge Bears fan, too, and he was elated when he saw
exactly.
the draft with Jordan Love.
Yep. We are, of course, all going to add in Bergen. Catch him on DAZN. Catch him on the GM Shuffle with Mike Lombardi. the Cowboys added CeeDee Lamb. They got Trayvon Diggs there late as well. I mean, I know we kind of poked fun at the yacht and Jerry Jones, but, I mean, you have to like what the Cowboys did in the draft, right? At least today.
Oh, I thought it was outstanding. And I say that as a diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan who was disgusted with the Jalen Hurts pick and a guy who just hates the Cowboys like nobody's business. I thought they did tremendous. I think that Diggs is terrific. I think he's an excellent cornerback. And CeeDee Lamb, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
Me and Lombardi made this point. You know how good their offense is now? Like, you've got to cover Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and CeeDee Lamb's your number 3 option. So your top cover corner is going to worry about Cooper, and all of a sudden CeeDee Lamb's going to be covered by either a weak safety or a linebacker. I mean, that is what a home run for the Cowboys. I thought Lamb was a great pick. Like I said, Diggs obviously is good for the secondary. And Neville Gallimore, shout out to Canada, fellow Canadians from Ottawa. He's a huge defensive tackle. Guy's 300 pounds of beef. I know they got down Terry Poe, and he hasn't been the same player as he was a few years ago with the Chiefs. But if Poe doesn't work out, Gallimore's right there to step up. And the biggest thing I noticed for the Cowboys, which you forget, oh, that's right, they have a great coach all of a sudden. And then no longer do we have the clapper, Jason Garrett, who is just a disaster and married to mediocrity. Now you've got Mike McCarthy. So you draft really good players. You've got a great coach. I'm very, very worried the Cowboys are going to be a beast right now in the NFC East.
The Last Dance, we're all watching Adnan. And I got this question for you. Phil Jackson, why was he so good at fitting the puzzle pieces together as a coach, but not so much as an exec, right? I mean, to get Dennis Rodman to do what you want to do, and like Phil did, I mean, that's, my gosh, it's almost, you could almost say a miracle at that point in Rodman's career. He fell in line. But then, again, maybe it's because they're different puzzles. Why as an exec, it doesn't work out the same way? And is it like Mike being great on the court, but as an exec, it hasn't worked out? What do you think?
That's exactly the analogy I was going to use. For great players, in their own discipline, it works. When you take them out of that comfort zone, it's a different animal, even though it's within the same realm. Exactly what you just said. Why do superstar athletes be great, but they don't translate as coaches? Wayne Gretzky, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan. None of these guys are ever spectacular. The best ones are always, like our old friends from ESPN, Aaron Boone, Alex Cora, guys that were grinders, David Ross, and great advantage with the Cubs. Guys that really saw the game well, worked hard, were never stars, but were able to communicate to all levels. I think communication is the key, and I agree with you. I tweeted that snide remark myself. I'm like, hey, too bad Phil couldn't make this work with the Knicks, because it was a disaster, and it was a tire fire, and yet Rodman's stuff was amazing. I thought that whole speech, that whole concept, I don't know about you guys, that was my favorite part of the documentary, where Rodman wanted the vacation, and Mike's like, listen, if you give him 48 hours, we're not going to get him back. But how smart was Phil? When you have superstar athletes, you do give them a little bit of rope. You do let them kind of balance things a little bit. I always find that amazing. You know, I got to coach Little League. I don't know about you guys, and I always laugh. I'm like, do I treat the star players better? Absolutely. I do. Like, they're my star players. You want to go get a drink? Go ahead, Timmy. You want to go take a pee break? Fine, whatever you want. You want to hit third today? Sure. Like, absolutely, man. Like, they're your star players. You do give them a little bit more rope. But I think Phil always understood that. Like, it was interesting with Doug Collins, who had a great relationship with Jordan. He said, you know, I rode Jordan as hard as anybody. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe if that's what Jordan wanted, and clearly he was uber competitive, that works. But Doug wasn't, you know, getting everybody else involved the way Phil was. So I'm with you. I think it's just a different discipline. But as a coach, he was spectacular. As a GM and executive, complete disaster.
You know, Adnan, I'm curious. I'm going to ask you to kind of view this from a sort of, you know, psychoanalytic perspective. But, you know, This documentary has gripped us as a nation. I think the numbers show that. But it makes me wonder, like, is there another team, is there another franchise, another superstar that could do this the way that MJ has? And I think about the Patriots, for example.
Interesting.
Undeniably a dynasty. They were a dynasty when Tom Brady was the quarterback for the New England Patriots. But I just don't think there's any way that if you release a 10-part documentary about the New England Patriots, we're huddling around our televisions like we are. I just don't think we're going to do that. So what is it about the Bulls and Michael Jordan and the 90s that makes us have to watch this? Because I just don't think other franchises who had been as successful would be able to do that.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that part of it. I think you could. This is, to me, it's actually been the home run part of it, is the benefit of time. I think if the Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, came out in 2004, it wouldn't do nearly as well. But I think nostalgia always plays. So 1998, I mean, when you think about that, 22 years ago, I'm 41 years of age, so I was a teenager. I remember it vividly. So anybody who's 40 remembers it really well. Anybody who's 30, okay, you were 8. If you were a sports fan, you probably definitely were into it, so you remembered a little bit. But that was the tail end, obviously, of the dynasty. So you're getting all these guys and gals in the 30s and 40s who are going, hey, remember when. And, of course, as a guy who loves The Sopranos, I always quote the episode where Tony Soprano says to Polly, remember when is the lowest form of conversation. But this entire documentary is remember when. Hey, remember when Robin did this? Remember when Pippen did this?
It is.
Remember this, remember that. So I think nostalgia plays well. The Patriots, I don't know. I mean, maybe in 20 years you could do a documentary, and I think it still would be fascinating about Belichick and Brady specifically, but this is all about timing. I think that they waited the right amount of time. They have access to great video from the 90s. And they're telling a great story. And here's the key, actually, honestly, guys, is accessibility. You ask anybody
in
a documentary, you've got to get to everybody. And when you're watching this, you're never once saying, oh, it's too bad they're missing this guy. No, they've got everybody. The only one I've noticed so far is no Krause, obviously. There's Reinsdorf, there's Phil Jackson, there's Pippen, there's Carmen Electra, there's you know, B.J. Armstrong, like, you can clearly tell they got everybody. That's my only fear with these documentaries is if you're missing a key piece, but clearly they got everybody. And Jordan, who's kind of like the Wizard in the Wizard of Oz, you know, he doesn't say this much. He's been particularly eloquent. And props to ESPN, by the way, for letting it go no holds barred. I just sent one of my kids to bed because there's just too many F-bombs. But
right.
As a fan of good television, I do think it's pretty passionate.
No, you're exactly right. Let me ask you this. Let me present you this hypothetical, Adnan. 22 years from now, a Golden State Warriors 10-part documentary. Like, I mean, because they're not
going to work.
Right.
No, I was going to say, it's not going to work for this reason, only because, and I know you guys do this just as I do, we go, we're never going to see that again. But really, I don't think we're ever going to see that again. Like, the way you got 6 rings mm-hmm. in one decade to me is insane. Like, I know the Patriots one has been great. I think of the Yankees 4 and 5 years late 90s, but like 6 in one decade is crazy. So the Warriors was a tremendous run, but when you think about it, it's 4 or 5 years. And like now we feel like it's already over. Like this year's a disaster. Hopefully they can rebuild a little bit, but they've still got Steph. Hopefully Clay can get back healthy, but it already feels different. So the Warriors now, I think like you got to have more juice. You got to get to like 4 or 5 rings. Then it gets stronger.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for the time, as always, man. Thanks, man.
J&J, I appreciate it, boys. Stay well, and I think things are opening up there in Tennessee, so stay safe. Hopefully everybody's okay.
Slowly but surely, man. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. He is Adnan Virk. Catch him on DAZN. Catch him on the GM Shuffle.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.